Almost done.
Get on through the, get on through here.
Are you ready? Hey, called to order the House Revenue Committee and welcome everybody here today. There are a couple bills. I'm going to go in reverse order. I think we probably won't take too much time today on Senate Bill 519. This is the third time we've had it up. We have it up one more time a week from Monday, but I just wanted to make sure that we gave everybody time to come on in and talk about it if they want. So, Jennifer, is anybody signed up on 519 or does anybody here want to speak on 519? Let me go ahead and open a public hearing on 519. Just to turn it over to Representative Hass. Do you want to do that now or do you want to wait?
Wait.
Until we take it up next time?
Yeah.
Okay.
I just saw it on the
okay.
agenda.
Okay.
519
is empty. Well, in that case, Representative Hobson came down here to watch us work on 519.
Going.
Yeah, well, it's going to go somewhere. Okay, in that case, I'll, well, thank you. Come on back a week from Monday.
Okay.
Okay, and that's when we'll have the big action. Close the public hearing on Senate Bill 519. You know, if I was smart, I'd go into work session and move his amendment.
What's his amendment?
$50 million on the...
Yeah.
No, because I vote no, and then you guys have...
$50 million on the
facilities grant.
50 million.
Huh?
Well.
50.
We'll talk about it next time. We'll talk about it next time. I didn't want to do that. I'm sorry.
So everybody gets funding they're entitled to under statute.
Okay, so that will save that discussion for a week from Monday, and to. Public hearing on Senate Bill 660, and welcome Dick.
Mr. Chair, Dick Hates with Legislative Revenue. Senate Bill 660 addresses the question of taxation, essentially, of the Internet or commerce on the Internet. The original bill that came before the House was a little broader than the bill, the A. and Gross bill that is before you. It dealt with electronic, used words like electronic commerce. But basically, the same issues involved, and that is whether the state or any municipal corporation or other political subdivision within the state may impose or collect a tax, a fee, or a charge, and then the question is on what. The original bill being somewhat broader, the bill before you saying on access to the Internet or use of the Internet if the tax or fee or charge was not in effect on the effective date of this act. The bill also prevents Oregon from assisting any other state or political subdivision of any other state from the collection of such a tax. The A. and Gross bill, with the Senate amendments, adds a subsection 2 there in Section 1, which does allow the legislature to authorize a tax or fee or charge on access. authorize local governments essentially to levy such tax, but they could not do it without the legislative action. Now, you have a number of amendments, or you have one amendment, I think, right now, which is a Dash 8 amendment, and this essentially narrows it somewhat further, taking out the words charge or fee and making it clearer that we're dealing with a tax as such, and taking out the aspect of collection of taxes that might be imposed by some other state. My understanding is there are a number of other amendments that will be brought back which sort of restore the original bill.
Okay. All right, let's go.
Mr. Chairman, if I can
ask. I'm sorry, Representative Witt, yes.
I'd like to ask Dick a question. On the A. and Gross version of the bill, Dick, and I'm looking at Section 1, Paragraph 2, isn't it kind of redundant to say that notwithstanding Section 1A, the state may impose a tax if legislation authorizes such a tax?
Well, it's not redundant in, well,
I don't know if the word's redundant.
It's backing out, I guess, in the sense that Section 1 prohibits it, subsection 1.
Right.
And then subsection 2 says, well, local governments could do it if it's authorized by the legislature.
Yeah, but it says notwithstanding section one, this state or a municipal corporation.
Yes.
I mean, the word this state, of course, the legislature can always, like, through subsequent legislation, can override current legislation.
At least.
Yeah.
I think it just, effectively recognizes we can pass a law.
Yeah.
Okay. Representative Starr, welcome back to the West Coast.
Thank you very much.
We missed you during your absence.
Thank you for that little comment, sir. Appreciate the opportunity to testify, Mr. Chair and members of the committee. For the record, I'm Bruce Starr, State Representative in House District 3 in Washington County. I'm a sponsor of this bill, along with Senator Atkinson and Speaker Simmons, among other co-sponsors of this bill. Quite honestly, I'm amiable to the bill as it was originally introduced as opposed to how the bill came to us from the Senate. And I know there are a series of amendments, and we actually had the A4s amended that really just returned the bill to its original state. There's also amendments, the A5s, the A5s, the A6s, and the A7s that are further clarifying our intent. And quite honestly, it's very simple what we're attempting to do here, and it's to establish the fact that in Oregon we won't tax sales on the internet, and that should be relatively simple. And we don't have a sales tax currently in the state, and we want that same provision to apply to sales that are purchased over the internet. Now, why would we need to bring that bill forward? Well, the real reason is, or one of the reasons is that there are a series of states, a collection of states across the union that have joined together to try to deal with the situation of collecting sales taxes over the internet. And quite frankly, we would like to provide an added protection to businesses and actually an incentive to business, our new emerging economy here in this state, to locate here and be relatively satisfied that they won't be charged with the responsibility of collecting sales tax on the sales of their items in other states. And that's the base bottom line objective of this bill. Is there clarifying language that needs to take place? I believe the answer to that question is yes. I believe that several of the amendments that you will have before you today will help to get us toward that end. I think that it's a relatively simple concept. Quite obviously, the details are the devil's in the details. The purpose here is not to not allow cities or counties that provide ISP service to charge for that service. That's not what we're intending to accomplish here, at least not from my perspective, and there's amendments to deal with that. Among other things, clarifying what businesses would be identified, what taxes we're talking about, and I believe the various amendments that you have get to that end. But honestly, I didn't have my hands in drafting the A5s through A7s, so I can't specifically address those, but those are the directions that we're looking for. Again, this is an opportunity to provide an incentive for business to locate here in the state of Oregon, creating a niche in Oregon as a safe marketplace for our business, create investment and employment opportunities and continued economic growth across the state of Oregon. With that, Mr. Chair, I'd be happy to answer some questions. I appreciate the opportunity to testify, and I look forward to working with the committee on this bill and how we mesh these amendments together to get to where we'd like to go with this issue. So with that, I'd answer any questions.
Thank you. Other questions for Representative Starr? Representative Hess.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative, I'm not clear on exactly the potential problem that you fear.
The what we're looking at is there are apparently 16 states that are considering legislation in a cooperating sovereignty arrangement. Our concern is that we may, either by inaction or without some action, be at some point looped into that kind of situation where our businesses that may sell their product in other states will be required to collect the tax for that other state. Even because the businesses in Oregon, they sell their products and some other state requires our state businesses to locate here in Oregon to collect the income through the sales tax for that state. And that's what we're looking at trying to preclude happening.
Yes,
sure.
You can answer this. I'm ignorant of that. Can that occur? Can California impose a sales tax?
Require an Oregon company to collect the tax? Deborah, how versed are you in these things? I guess, you know, we have an analogy with catalog sales, certainly. Sales from Oregon into states that have sales tax. And don't those fall under use tax in the state where they where the goods are delivered?
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, Deborah Buchanan, Department of Revenue. My expertise is in income tax.
Do we have any sales tax experts?
I have some my expert. I'm sorry, Representative, I could not quite measure the question.
I was just wondering about the law that representatives are...
No.
That other fear is that the states who enter into this compact or whatever it would be would impose a sales tax on Oregon companies who sold those their products over the Internet.
Okay. States that have a sales tax generally also impose a use tax. And they're sort of the same thing. Washington, for example, has a sales tax. A Washington resident who comes to Oregon to buy a product, and that company is only located in Oregon, that company does not collect a sales tax on that sale. The Washington resident is obligated to remit a use tax if they take it back and use it in Washington. So that's the sales and use tax component. If an Oregon company has nexus in a state that imposes a sales and use tax, then that company can be required to collect sales or use tax for sales into that state. For example, an Oregon company that also has a branch office located in California that makes sales. If an Oregon company ships to that state, they can be required to collect a sales tax on behalf of California because they have nexus or physical presence in that state. Does that answer the question?
Yes, the chair brought up the point about catalog sales and what happens in those cases. Say, Norm Thompson's catalogs, Oregon-based company, and someone in California calls in and buys a hat from Norm Thompson. Is he, hey, California, is he required under what you just said, the use?
Mr. Chair, Representative Hass, that person would be required to remit a tax, and Norm Thompson could be compelled to collect it if Norm Thompson has nexus with California. If they have stores in California, for example, and they would have nexus in California and sales going into California, they could be required to collect a tax. If a company is making mail order sales and the company is located only in one state and has no physical presence in another state, even though they are shipping into that state without the physical presence, I don't believe they can be required to collect a tax on behalf of that state where the shipment is going.
I think that's right. So I guess, Representative Starr, apart from the language of the amendments, that's conceptually where we're going with this bill, isn't it? We want to make sure that that same concept is encompassed within Internet transactions as it is... hard goods and, well, catalog and other kinds of transactions.
That's correct.
Conceptually, that's where we want to go.
Yeah.
Okay. Representative Bates.
Yes.
Oh, wait. Hold it. I'm sorry. Representative Beckman.
No, I'm Pat.
Okay.
You know, just to make it clear, I think that what really happens in reality is that when people buy through the Internet or over catalog sales from a state like Oregon, where there is no sales tax, they get the goods without paying the sales tax, and it works the other way on us, too. We looked at another committee at a cigar tax situation where the cigar tax has become so high in this state that people buy a huge amount of cigars from Florida, and there's no sales tax in Florida on cigars, and that we never collect those taxes because you can't track them. Can't easily track Internet sales that way.
Okay.
So, I mean, the reverse. What you're doing here is setting up a situation for sales out of the state of Oregon to other states, attracting businesses to do that on the basis, to a certain degree, we don't have a sales tax. The biggest, one of the biggest employers in Southern Oregon is Harry and David. I don't know if you guys have heard of them or not. And they ship all over the country, all over the world.
Mm-hmm.
And they are, as far as I know, not interested in trying to collect sales tax in various areas they ship to around the country. And the people that receive those goods, as far as I know, don't make an effort to tell their local state, gee, I got them from Harry and David. I really want to pay my sales tax on that. How do I do it? just doesn't happen. So I think you're taking advantage of an important point here for the state of Oregon, trying to bring businesses in.
That's correct.
What we don't want you to do is get in trouble with problems we've had before of limiting the ability of a local municipality or county to assess a cost onto building the internet, building the cable. You want to be able to get things flowing here.
That's exactly right.
I understand.
Representative Witt.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Isn't it also true, though, you take Washington, which has a significant sales tax, to the extent that they're sending products mail order out of state to customers in other states, catalog sale or direct mail order or whatever, they aren't collecting a tax in those cases if they don't have a nexus in that state as well. Isn't that correct?
Jim Craven is shaking his head in the affirmative. Maybe he can answer that when he comes up.
Okay. I don't think Oregon's in a unique position there, the fact that we don't have a sales tax. That would simply avoid the tax, I think, relative to sales in state. But a state that does have a sales tax for sales to its own consumers in its own state, I don't think there's any sales tax imposed when you ship it out of state and there's no nexus with that state.
Mr. Chair, Representative Witt, you're correct. The responsibility to pay the use tax is on the person who buys the product.
Right.
Yeah. Right. Yeah.
Okay.
Thank you very much.
Thank you. Thank you, Deborah. Stay tuned. We might bring you back. Dick, you had something before I...
I was just going to comment that I think Ms. Buchanan has sort of laid out the situation as it is now, but I think the concern is that that's rather unstable and that that could change. And what I think that is feared by the business community is that they will end up having to track 10,000 different communities, because you not only have 50 states, but you have different sales tax rates in each county and each jurisdiction within those states, and having to remit sales tax to all of those different jurisdictions across the country.
I have a question, but I'll hold it. Marzloff?
Yes.
Marzloff, come on up, please. Welcome.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. Thank you for the opportunity to be here today to speak on a bill of great importance to Oregon consumers. SB 660, the 2001 Internet Tax Ban. My name is Ross Marzoff. I'm Deputy Director of Washington Citizens for Sound Economy. And I'm today here on behalf of Russ Walker, who is out of state on CFC business, and asked me to come today to deliver his testimony. I have to warn you that internet taxation is not my area of expertise. I am doing this as a favor for Russ. I'd be happy to attempt to answer any questions. However, I may just have to take the questions and give them to Russ, and he will get back to you next week when he returns.
And we got couple of internet experts here in the room, so Jim Craven, if you'll just be listening to the questions and you want to do a backup, well, you can just take note of those too. So
I appreciate that.
Yeah, you bet.
CSE has been fighting for less regulation, lower taxes, and more economic freedom since our founding in 1984. Over the past 3 years, we've been educating our membership and the public at large about the danger that taxes on internet access and sales could pose to consumer welfare. Last year, Oregon CSE mobilized grassroots support for an internet tax moratorium through a frenzy of emails, phone calls, and faxes to Washington County Commissioner Delna Jones of the President's Advisory Committee on Electronic Commerce. In a conversation that my colleague Russ Walker had with Commissioner Jones, she exclaimed, "I got so many faxes, letters, and phone calls, and a billion emails, all with your organization's name on them." Oregon CSE has also mobilized grassroots support in 1999 for the successful alternative telecommunications regulation initiative. Thanks to numerous calls, letters, and personal contacts, Oregon CSE was able to put telecom reform to the top of the legislative agenda and get it passed. This much-needed reform has increased telecom investment in the state and dramatically improved access to the Internet in general and broadband Internet in particular. While we were pleased that SB 660 passed the Senate with nearly unanimous support, we are not pleased that the Senate stripped the bill of its most meaningful component, a ban on the imposition of sales and use taxes on Oregon consumers or sales and use tax collection obligations in Oregon businesses. Oregon CSE strongly supports an amendment to 660 that would prohibit the state or any of its political subdivisions from assisting in the collection of a sales or use tax imposed by another state. Sales and use taxes are a matter that should be addressed between a state's government and the residents of that state. Other states should not have the power to whimsically enlist Oregon retailers to collect their taxes. The language of this amendment reflects that of 1998 Internet Tax Freedom Act sponsored by Senator Wyden. If implemented, this amendment would stop Internet sales proposals from infecting the Oregon economy and erect a wall of safety for Oregon consumers. In Washington, D.C., various proposals are currently being debated to create an Internet tax cartel whereby state governments would gain the power to compel retailers from other states to collect their taxes. Oregon consumers are particularly threatened by such schemes. A tax cartel would place an undue regulatory burden on Oregon businesses unaccustomed with sales tax collection that would be transferred to Oregon consumers in the form of higher prices. A tax cartel could also force Oregonians to subsidize the tax collection efforts of other states through our tax dollars. These tax cartel proposals have placed Oregon consumers in a state of tax purgatory. If something is not done this session, consumers may be enlisted to pay for a costly and inefficient extra-constitutional tax bureaucracy. The Oregon legislature must defend its consumers from such a desperate and ill-conceived proposal. If other states wish to drive investment outside their borders and compromise consumer privacy, use state-sponsored accounting software and so-called trusted third parties, that is their mistake to make. But there is no reason Oregon consumers should fall victim to such a misguided scheme. We must not hire out tax collection to firms who would have an incentive to overcollect taxes. If we take a step back from the heated rhetoric and reflect on the case for an Internet tax cartel, its perverse logic becomes apparent. When tax collectors first came up with the cartel idea, their thinking went something like this. It is more difficult to collect taxes than out-of-state Internet purchases, so we must place a new burden on out-of-state businesses and consumers to collect the taxes for us. Of course, such regulation will require retailers to know the specific tax laws of over 7,000 independent U.S. jurisdictions, collect the appropriate tax, and then remit it to the relevant tax authority. The cost to comply with this convoluted system will be passed on to consumers in the form of higher prices. Once the unjustified compliance cost of this regulatory burden became known, the original cartel proposal became politically untenable, so revisions had to be made. To address this concern, the two leading cartel proposals encourage states to simplify their tax systems to an unspecified degree and use tax dollars to reimburse retailers or accountants with whom they contract for the cost to comply with the regulatory burden. This scheme would tax consumers to subsidize sellers so they can collect more taxes from the same consumers. It is also essential to note that in a federalist tax system, states attempt to attract businesses and consumers by making their tax and regulatory policies more appealing than those of rival states. This leads to greater prosperity across the nation as the ambitions of state regulators are held in check by the constant risk of overcompliance. To conspire with other states to limit the risk associated with overly burdensome taxes and regulations is to replace the federalist arrangement with a cartel that would erode, if not completely eliminate, Oregon's competitive advantage in the West. If sales taxes are standardized across the nation, tax competition between states will not end. It will simply involve different taxes. States will attempt to lower income, property, and corporate excise taxes to allure business while making up the difference through a higher nationwide sales tax rate that business cannot avoid. This tax competition could prove disastrous to Oregon's economy or budget or both. We still have much to do to remove regulatory barriers to investment and competition in Oregon, and Oregon CSE members understand that. Our activists continue to show up on a regular basis to demand less government intrusion in the marketplace. However, my message today is much more simple. I'd like to communicate a very simple message to you on behalf of Oregon CSE. Oregon consumers should not be required to pay taxes to out-of-state tax collectors. Likewise, Oregon businesses should not become the unwilling tax collectors for distant politicians who do not live, work, or face voters in Oregon. SB 660 must be amended to prevent this tragedy from coming to pass. It is important to reassert the essential component of this legislation that provides taxpayer protection against out-of-state sales and use taxes. Oregon does not have a sales or use tax. We should not pay or collect sales and use taxes for others. Mr. Chairman, thank you for this opportunity.
Representative Witt.
Thank you. What is it in the AIM Gross version of the bill that came out of the Senate that you object to?
Pardon me?
What is it you object to in the Senate version of the bill?
I believe it's what was taken out. That's the objection.
Yeah, can you tell me what specifically? Because I don't see where your objection is.
I am not certain as to how to answer that.
It looks to me that it's reformatted a little bit. It looks to me it says the same thing, except it's added this paragraph two, which doesn't mean anything from what I can see.
I know that Senator Atkinson's testimony will be presented today, and they may be able to shed some light on that that I am not available to do.
Okay. Because I don't see, Mr. Chairman, I don't see where the problem is.
Well, I'm guessing, and I am, but I see that in the A4s, which I think mimic the original language of the bill, there's language there that relates to a tax on electronic commerce. And I assume that's the internet version of a sales tax. And the A engrossed version gets at a fee or charge on access
or use.
To or use of the internet. And I'm not sure
that's part of it.
If that's the same thing, I don't know. Oh, well, come on up. Are you Teresa? Or Tessa?
Yeah.
Come on up. You're next anyway. But before, are you done? Did you have another question?
Well, yeah, it's electronic commerce done over the internet. I guess it becomes the question.
Yeah, that's a good question.
I mean, is that exclusively where it's done?
Yeah.
One could argue that your representative Witt, Mr. Chairman, that your credit card swiping is mm-hmm. arguably electronic commerce, I would think.
Really? Yeah. I guess one thing, I guess if in your testimony, that was before you heard the discussion about sales tax and how a sale made by an Oregon company to, let's say, an out-of-state person, let me see, in a sales tax state, if the Oregon company has nexus in that state, as I understood Deborah's testimony, and Jim, if you could give me a nod of the head, I think under the current rules, that Oregon company could be required to collect and remit the sales tax on that transaction because they are physically located or have nexus anyway in that state in which the sales tax is imposed. Do I understand that you would object to that scenario even?
No, I don't think that's an objection here.
Okay.
I think it's going beyond that, Mr. Chair, to collecting sales and use taxes on companies that don't have nexus.
Okay. Okay, so you're in agreement that at least in principle what we talked about before somehow establishing the same policy on internet transactions as we have on sales currently now under sales tax and sales of goods other than through the internet.
Mr. Chair, I believe that to be the case.
Okay. Okay.
Thank you, Chair Shetterly. For record, my name is Tessa Platt. I'm the legislative aide for Senator Jason Atkinson. Unfortunately, he had to go down to district, so he couldn't be with you today. His brother's getting married, and he's the best man, so he needed to be there.
His priorities.
Yes. Sorry.
And there are some here that, even though we like Senator Atkinson, would argue that he's the best man at anything. But we'll,
oh,
you know.
I'll tell him that. He wrote some comments for me to read. I am not an expert as well on internet taxes, but I've been working on this bill, and I can hopefully answer some questions. Internet taxes began as a bipartisan bid in Washington, D.C. In 1998, Congress passed a moratorium on internet taxes. In May 2000, the House repassed that ban, but the Senate failed to pass it. So what we're trying to do with Senate Bill 660 is to put Oregon basically ahead of the national curve and ban internet taxes in the state. The current bill bans access to the internet, and what we want to do with the amendments is restore some of the original language and ban taxes on transitions, ban discriminatory taxes on transitions. This isn't banning hotel taxes. This isn't banning stuff that's normally taxed. This is discriminatory taxes just because it's an internet transaction is what we're aiming at. Basically, he wrote down 3 points of why this bill is good for Oregon, so I'll just tell you what they are. First, it's good policy for rural Oregon, for small businesses. If you have a small business, it might have a real small population area. They can gain a lot of revenue by doing internet business, so it helps rural Oregon. He has some examples of bookstores out in eastern Oregon who are able to sustain business because of the internet. Number two, the energy crisis. A lot of dot-com businesses are wanting to leave California, so where better to come than Oregon? We make it a good market, they'll be willing to come here. And finally, he wrote that it's hip, and Oregon is always ahead of the curve. So, in Senator Atkinson's words, this bill is hip, and he urges your eye vote.
Well, I wasn't so persuaded by the system, but last one got me.
Are you
hip? I want to be.
He's so hip, you know. So.
Other questions for Tessa? Ms. Platt. Okay, thank you very much, and Mr. Marzoff.
Thank you.
You bet. Susan Schneider, why don't you come up? Jim, you're not signed up. Are you going to testify? Hope so. Okay.
Good afternoon, members of the committee. For the record, Jim Craven with the, I'm surrounded by local government. I always do get worried. Jim Craven representing the American Electronics Association. Let me, and this is not our bill. This is a bill that brought to you from a number of your colleagues and Citizens for Sound Economy. And so I do want to just try to clarify some of the issues here. And, you know, the policy decisions are ultimately yours. There is a current federal law, so-called Wyden-Cox Tax Internet Moratorium, Tax Freedom Act, that was passed a couple years ago in Congress. There's a lot of misunderstanding about what that did and didn't do. It did not ban Internet taxes. What it said was Internet taxes on access to the Internet. In other words, you've got an account with a ISP. Government cannot come and say, oh, by the way, instead of $19.95 a month for unlimited access, we're going to tack additional $5 on because it looks like something easy to tax. So that's the tax on Internet access charges, okay? Congress also said that no new, for the period of the moratorium, which expires this October, no new discriminatory taxes on electronic commerce. So if a tax already existed, Congress did not try to overturn or trump anything currently in existence. Congress did not ban the legitimate collection of sales taxes on Internet commerces under the current scheme of the Quill decision, which was what we were referring to earlier, the Supreme Court decision, that it was a mail order catalog decision, but it still basically is the only compelling decision we have regarding the tax of remote sales. Whether it's catalog or the Internet, it's really basically the same concept. I'm a business in State A. I ship to State B. Congress said under Quill, whether you're mail ordering from Harry and David or 800.com selling a stereo over the Internet, Congress said the state cannot reach back to the origin state and compel the remission of sales taxes unless that company had business nexus in the destination state. It was an interstate commerce kind of construction. So that's the law of the land. The Wyden moratorium bill only said the new wrinkle of we're not going to tack an extra few bucks a month on your AOL account, and also said no new creative electronic commerce overlay taxes that didn't previously exist that would treat those sales differently in a discriminatory way from other kinds of sales. So still, the Quill decision is the law of the United States. What's going on right now in a very heated fashion? Congress wants to extend that moratorium on the access charge. They want to make that permanent. It's a very popular concept, as you can imagine, saying we're not going to, because you're on the Internet, we're not going to throw a few bucks a month charge on you as a consumer. What Congress is also, though, in a much more complex debate, talking about what do we do about this issue of the Quill decision? What do we do about this thorny issue of origin and destination sales and the complaints, whether legitimate or not, by local governments around the country that the Internet is eroding by billions of dollars their collection of sales and use taxes. I've been told that sales and use tax collections in the United States are an all-time high, so it's more of an issue of, but they could be even higher if we could tag the Internet than they are today. So that's a legitimate concern. What Congress is working on right now is a sort of an if-then kind of scheme regarding Quill. There are a number of states. There's a model lobbying, and you heard a little bit of that before, called the Sales Tax Simplification Project. There's a model law out there that is before a number, has already passed a number of states and is still probably passed a number more before the states adjourn this year, that basically tries to get at the issue of there's something on the order of 10 to 12, 14,000 sales taxing districts in the United States. You know, it's not a matter of the 46 states that have sales tax or whatever, it's a matter of every county, local government, special district that has sales taxes. Asking the origin seller, the seller located in State A, to understand that system in every basically street address in America. Because if, you know, somebody orders something on the Internet, they put in a Visa card, they give you an address in Iowa, to know exactly what is the effective sales tax rate at every home address in the country is doable. It's complex. It's a big software lookup program, but it is doable. But it doesn't get at the issue of Quill, because Quill says, doable or not, you can't reach out across state lines and compel collection of sales and use taxes unless you have nexus. What Congress is considering, and it hasn't passed, and I think there's a long way to go between here and there, Congress is considering opening up the Quill decision, and as the advocates have, I think, rightly testified, possibly allowing for a scheme for destination states to reach out and compel origin state businesses to remit sales taxes in another state. Now, that's kind of a core of one of the issues in this debate here. I think most Oregon companies would probably not want that to happen, given the fact that it's easier to ship stuff all over the country and not worry about sales taxes than it is, because paying is not just the only issue, remitting. But the fact that you're remitting a sales tax to a destination state opens you up to issues of audit, you know, theoretically by 12 to 14,000 districts around the state who can come audit you and find out whether you're sending the right amount of money and all that, opens you possibly to exposure to nexus for a host of other business taxes, business activity taxes, corporate excise taxes, and the like. So Congress is trying to sort this out, and there's a number of bills being debated right now. One scheme says if a certain amount of states, 20, 30 or something, adopt this model program, and some of the components of that model law are single rate, at least a single rate for electronic commerce, limited auditability, non-exposure to nexus, so a host of issues, sort of an if-then. If enough states would simplify their sales tax systems for the sake of e-commerce, then Congress may consider allowing origin states or compelling Oregon states to remit taxes. It's a big, big issue. I'm not positive that any words we can write here can stop that. I'm not sure that a statute we write in Oregon can stop that from happening, because it's not going to happen on State B coming and making us do something. It's probably going to happen on Congress allowing State B to reach into Oregon to collect those taxes. So it's a fairly complex debate going on, but I think that's the background behind what I know the advocates are trying to get at in the issue about may not assist another state. To debate some of the base parts of the bill, the issue of internet access and not taxing internet access, I think, is a consensus issue. I know some of the other people, the League of Oregon Cities and others, have been trying to make sure we get the words just right, and there's still a little futzing, I think, that needs to happen in the bill. But really, you've got, I think, three concepts here. You've got, even though we don't have a sales tax in Oregon, you might want to say that we're not going to have a sales tax in Oregon for internet sales for Oregon residents. That's one. The second thorny concept of this issue of origin and destination, and can we really write language that would stop another state from coming in, and that's a complex concept. And then third, I think the very consensus, popular nut of the bill that says this legislature is going to make promise to its voters here in Oregon that the state and local government in Oregon is not going to tax sheer access to the internet. So I think those are the three kernels that we got going here. And I know we have a number of paperwork and a bunch of dash amendments, and it's probably going to take some time for everyone to work together for a few more days to sort it all out.
Madam Chair, thank you. Jim, isn't there a problem here of discriminatory treatment? Namely, if a business is in State A, let's say you have nexus to State A, let's say it's California. California has an 8 or 8.5% sales tax. It's down in the Los Angeles area, for example. So if you're there, or if you have nexus there, and you're selling a product to a consumer in California, you have to charge that 8.5% tax.
You're a California firm?
Let's say you have nexus there.
Okay.
You have an office there. You could be an Oregon firm with an office there. That's my company's situation.
Right.
Okay? So we have to collect California sales tax. Even if we ship the product out of our warehouse in Portland, we have to collect the California sales tax, charge the customer. If you have a company over in Nevada that does not have nexus to California,
mm-hmm.
and they sell it over the internet, for example,
right.
they don't have to collect the sales tax. The customer ends up not paying the sales tax. It's an 8.5% price advantage.
Mm-hmm.
So doesn't this kind of legislation impose potential discriminatory treatment?
This bill or what Congress is talking about?
Or what Congress has done, or this bill specifically.
Right.
Couldn't this contribute to a discriminatory treatment? Because things that are sold over the Internet where you don't have nexus, no tax has to be collected, but a competitor may have nexus.
Right.
And selling the same product, and it may raise the price 8 or 9%.
Ms. Vice Chair, Representative Witt, I think the problem is that is the current situation. There is that discrimination, and it rests ultimately on the fact that the sales taxes are the purview of the state. They are something that a state imposes upon customers in its state. And there's various ones around the country and various levels. And if everybody lived in a closed moat sort of state, we wouldn't have these problems. If everything you bought was produced in your state and sold in your state, you wouldn't have these problems. When you start crossing state boundaries, it's been a chronic issue. The Internet did not raise this as a fundamental issue. The mail order, destination, remote shipping, all those things are out there. I think what Congress is trying to do is actually try to level the playing field. They're trying to protect, you know, the screaming outrage by the Council of Mayors and the National Association of Governors and such are saying, you've got to save us because the Internet's killing us. And that's what they're trying to wrestle through. So,
but isn't there another issue there? And that's the issue that the merchant, the vendor, who has nexus or is in the state,
right,
ends up effectively with a price that's 8 or 9% higher than someone who's selling on the Internet. So not only does this current provision, as more and more sales are made through the Internet or through mail order, not only does that undermine state and local revenues, but it also creates an unfair disadvantage for stores that have nexus or are located within the state who have to collect the tax from the customer and then remit it.
I agree, Representative Witt, and I think that's back in Congress, the voice of Main Street as opposed to the e-commerce, the voices are very loud. The voices of the bricks and mortars booksellers, for instance, you know, trying to sort this out with BarnesandNoble.com and Amazon.com and saying you're going to erode, there is a competitive disadvantage. And Congress, I think it's a long, brutal political battle ahead of us. It's not going to be resolved this year, I don't believe. You know, Congress is considering leveling that playing field, trying to take away some of that competitive disadvantage by allowing for the collection of remote taxes. But Oregon companies who are in the Internet space or in the other space, should be concerned. I'm not positive, and I share the concern of the advocates of the bill. I'm not positive we can stop it, but we do share that concern. I don't think anybody ultimately wants to say that forever we're going to have a system where there's this innate competitive advantage because of the mode in which you sell.
Right, and Mr. Chairman, I would point out that I know my business, and I'm sure it's representative of many businesses, to the extent that we're doing business through our offices in Los Angeles and Seattle, we lose business to competitors who are selling mail order over the Internet because we have a discriminatory treatment that we have to collect an 8 or 9% tax that they don't have to collect from the customer.
Absolutely.
Interesting. Representative Bates.
I would suspect that the opposite also hold true. I mean, I lived in Vancouver, Washington for years, and all of us went across the river to buy groceries and TV sets and toasters, not cars because they were registered. And
you must have been up late at night calculating your use tax.
I was going to say, Mr. Chair, Representative Bates, you may want to stop the conversation right here.
I said my neighbors. I didn't.
Oh, thank you.
I mean, it was hell. I mean, every night you write that down. And so, I mean, that you can think of that as a parallel to the Internet that's been going on for years.
Right.
And it's going to be a competitive advantage for businesses to come to this state, as long as they haven't got a nexus in another state, to go ahead and sell from here.
Mm-hmm.
And so it cuts both ways.
Mr. Chair, Representative Bates, I think it is right now a marginal competitive advantage for an 800.com. I don't know if you know the firm in Portland that sells stereo gear, TV sets. They're pure play, located in Oregon, does its fulfillment out of Oregon, as I understand. And if you go to their webpage, 800.com, you'll see in a fairly prominent placement on that home page, no sales tax. And they're very proud of the fact, and they promote that in national sales. Ultimately, what Congress, I think, has to wrestle with is Ultimately, is that fair? I mean, ultimately, is it going to lead theoretically to erosion of tax bases at other local levels? I mean, that's their arguments to make, you know, not mine. But
did you want to speak to your head? Did you, Dennis? To your amendments, you had the
Mr. Chair, on the dash eights, at the request of a number of parties, I was just trying to improve the language of the internet access ban part of the bill. And was not not purporting that this would be the only version of the bill and necessarily a total gut and stuff. There are these other issues in the bill about assisting other states, about whether we want to say we're not going to have a sales tax in Oregon that the advocates are proposing. So on the dash eights, what I was trying to do on that was fix that one of those themes, just clarify the issue of the one concept about taxing internet or internet access or use of internet. And the language in the dash eights, the definition of internet, the definition of internet access are taken right out of the current federal moratorium law. That's where, that's how we get the word myriad into our Oregon statutes. And at the request over the last week, I know a lot of people were concerned about even the amended Senate bill. It had the words tax fee or charge. And I know the city of Salem, which has and offers an internet service to its local residents, I know the Department of Administrative Service came up and said, does charge mean when we're charging back other agencies for their internet websites? Is that a problem? So what these do is focus the word on tax to kind of clarify that government's not going to tax internet access. We're not going to put a per month tax on your AOL account or put a per minute tax on when you're online. So that's all the dash eights do, is try to address that issue of the bill, but there are other issues in the other amendments that are still out there.
Madam Chair.
This is musical chairs.
Oh, we got rotating Madam Chairs here.
Yes, that's right.
Thank you. So Jim, what you're saying with the dash eights is it doesn't go to the issue of electronic commerce at all. Relative to the taxation of that commerce,
right.
It only goes to no tax on the access or the use of the internet itself.
Right, Representative. What that's all they were trying to do, and I wasn't trying to preclude the other themes from the bill. Other people have other language.
Madam Chair.
Yes.
Thank you, Jim. What did you mean when you said this? One of the kernels here is politics.
Pardon me, could you repeat that?
Did you say there were some political reasons for passing this? You mentioned there were three kernels of what this is about.
Madam Chair, Representative Haas, I think I was just saying that I'm pretty certain that putting a ban on taxing internet access is a politically popular theme. In fact, Congress is going, I think, likely to do that permanently, nationally, this year, but we don't know, and they won't be done before we adjourn. So I think that's all I was trying to indicate.
Dick?
I just wanted to point out for Jim that the word myriad did not survive legislative council.
Oh. You're kidding.
Oh. Proud of that.
It became a combination.
Oh, combination. Oh, well, then I'm off this bill. The federal law actually includes the word myriad.
Representative Witt.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. This is the fifth Mr. Chairman in rotation that I've...
Sorry.
Mr. and Madam Chairman, that I've gotten permission to ask a question. That's been a problem. So, Jim, if you look at the A engrossed version of the bill, the A engrossed version of the bill is not incompatible with the dash eights, I don't believe, other than it adds the language that you can't enter into an agreement with another state to assist in the collection of a tax imposed by the other state on access to the internet. It deletes the electronic commerce portion of this entirely.
Right, Mr. Chair, Representative, that's what your earlier question about what did Senate Revenue Committee do? Mm-hmm. That is what they did. They kind of got in a little bit of a free-willing discussion about all the things where they opening up too much by putting electronic commerce in. So they took electronic commerce out of both sections, and I think that, I don't want to speak for the advocates, but I think that's what, because the section about not assisting another state, what Senate Revenue did was say we couldn't assist another state in collecting internet access fees, and they deleted electronic commerce from both sections of the bill, and thus I think in the advocate's mind, watered down their key concept.
Okay. I guess, yeah, that's interesting, and maybe, Jim, for you or for anybody on the committee that wants to answer, but I'm looking at the A4s, which are before us now, which I think goes back to the original language of the bill. Section 2, the state, et cetera, may not assist another state or political subdivision in the collection of a tax fee or charge imposed by the other state on interstate on electronic commerce, for instance. I guess, to what extent do you know... I'm trying to think if we've got an Oregon internet retailer with an actual nexus in a sales tax state that is failing to remit sales tax. Do you read the dash fours to mean that this sort of creates a tax haven for that retailer to be able to avoid?
Well, Mr. Chair, I'm not sure we can write language that would obviate someone's obligation to remit in another state where they had nexus. So I think that's the difficulty of trying to get the language correct here. But I've been told that the department director may want, Elizabeth Harshenko may wish to share some of her thoughts on this bill at a subsequent.
Yeah, I think that's right. We'll be scheduling it again. Representative Witt.
Mr. Chairman, it seemed to me that if the other state had nexus, it would have, it could be in a position to bring an action against the lender. Mm-hmm. So, you know, it wouldn't need Oregon to assist.
No, not.
Hmm. I guess, Mr. Chairman, to wrap up, I'm certainly willing to, you know, work with whomever. I mean, it's not my bill. I'm trying to bring whatever help I can to the process, but and I'm willing to continue to do that in subsequent days and hopefully not weeks.
Yeah, right. Susan.
Mr. Chair, for the record, Scott Bocata with Oregon Municipal Electric Utility. Our concern is not with the underlying bill, but simply to, from our perspective, make sure that there were unintended consequences, one of which Jim already alluded to ensure that a public agency that is providing internet access, acting as an ISP, whether that service is provided as dial-up over copper wire or over fiber capability system, that we can collect or provide the charge for providing that service. That's the piece that we're concerned about, it. And also to make sure Susan has a concern about permits.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, Susan Schneider of the City of Portland. We don't have any problem with the underlying intent to mimic the federal law to prohibit the access, local taxes on access to the internet, and we think that the Dash 8 amendments go a long way to clarifying and making sure there aren't unintended consequences from that. On line 17 of Dash 8, however, the way that the language reads there, we think there needs to be some clarification of that, and staff is just handing out language we think gets better at the issue of making sure that you're not sweeping in permit fees. And on line 14, to add in the language at the end of that, and cable services.
I'm sorry, Susan, the language, you passed out a fax.
Yes, and I apologize, it's not an LC draft. We will get to LC with that. It goes
where it goes.
At line 17, delete.
On the original bill?
On the Dash 8 amendment.
Oh, okay.
Line 17.
Oh, hang on a second.
Stay with not include.
Wait.
No.
We got tons of amendments here. Dash 8.
Dash 8.
Okay.
Dash 8.
So, are we there?
Yep.
All right. Okay.
Right there? Dash 8, not include. Delete from A to the end of the sentence.
What line is she on? I'm sorry.
Line 17.
17.
We'll start with a C and delete the rest of the line. Yeah. So it reads, a tax does not include, and then delete the rest of the sentence and add, any fee charged for providing a service or imposing for conferring a privilege or benefit to any individual or entity or to a class of individuals or entities. And that deals with the issue of permits.
And then, Mr. Chair, the issue that I raised is on line 14 of the dash eights to ensure that, to add the words and cable services, which again, the intent is to ensure that we could collect for the service provided, whether it was over telephony, copper, or over fiber cable modem. I'm not sure whether we've got the exactly the right language, but that's the intent.
I'm wondering, you know, we've raised some questions about the scope of electronic commerce and what that means. When the definitions that you're working with in the A8, do you see a way to get to something in the lines of internet commerce? Using your definition of internet, I'm trying to get at what the proponents of the bill were trying to prohibit. Does that advance us anywhere down the field?
Mr. Chair, I think it might. I hate to write here in front of the microphone.
Yeah,
again, I think you have three policy issues in this debate. You've got one, don't tax internet access or the use of the internet.
Right.
Popular, and I think consensus, just get the words right.
Right.
Number two, and I think where you're headed is that second one about Oregon. Oregon is not going to tax Oregon citizens on electronic commerce, and that may work down.
Internet commerce.
We put the words down, there'll be 18 more people with Dash Amendment.
No, that's right.
But then you have that third policy issue about may not assist other states. So it's really those three things to wrestle with here.
Okay. This, well, yeah.
I'm still not clear on how you're distinguishing between Oregonians not taxing Oregonians for internet commerce and not taxing the internet. I mean, how do we reach beyond Oregon? I'm still not clear on that. Are there really three issues, or are there just two?
Mr. Chair, Representative Carlson, I do think there's three. I don't want to go too far out in representing the proponent's bill for them. There may be only two, but I think a key element of their proposal is try to find a way to prohibit other states from reaching into Oregon to collect their sales taxes from Oregonians. That's a fair debate. I'm not sure. I think it kind of came up more today in the hearing about prohibiting Oregon from taxing Oregonians. If you want to make sure that we're not going to have a sales tax, I guess you can put that in the bill.
Thought of an internet, but when Representative literally added internet,
yes,
I couldn't understand the difference between the two of them. That's okay.
Okay. Thank you very much. Mike Dewey, let's bring you up. I'm sorry, Representative Merkley, are you here on this bill? You're just slumming.
Yes.
Go ahead.
Mr. Chairman, I was just going to ask you to ask Mr. Dewey where his tie was today.
Mr. Dewey, where's your tie today?
I think it's in
the Representative Rexel.
I know. Tom Gallagher has it.
Okay.
That's the second time today he's been questioned about his lack of a tie.
Yeah, right.
He's golfing tonight, I understand.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, for the record. Members of the committee, Mike Dewey, representing the Oregon Cable Telecommunications Association, a trade association of Oregon cable companies. Hopefully I don't confuse this issue any more than perhaps it already has been. But nonetheless, the A. and Gross bill piqued our interest. I was not necessarily following the legislation on behalf of my client because I thought it dealt with kind of sales tax issues primarily. But when we talked about impose, collect a fee or charge on access, on the one hand, we like the bill because it does say that a city cannot impose a fee, and cities in some cases do impose a fee of 5%, which has been litigated, and I will get into that in a minute, for a cable company that provides high-speed cable modem service. And usually that's in the neighborhood of 5%. Clearly, they have that authority. We've had this discussion in the Smart Growth Committee to do that on cable television service. In question was cable modem service. But nonetheless, the other side of the equation is we want to make sure if a bill moves forward here that we have the right to charge a fee to our customers who access the Internet. And this language seems to perhaps not say that. So we want to make sure we clarify that, as Mr. O'Connor talked about. Let me say with regard to the issue of taxing the cable company or their franchise to impose a 5% charge on that, which remits to the cities, the applicable kind of law here today is AT&T versus the City of Portland in a kind of a cable modem dispute, and it was over the issue of access. But the final decision there was that cable modem service was not a cable service. Lawyers argue as to what it is based on that opinion, but the Ninth Circuit said it is not a cable service. And so you are seeing some of the companies looking at this and who had been paying a 5% franchise fee suggesting that they would no longer pay that fee. They were concerned about class action suits and so forth from their customers because the city didn't have the authority. We think this bill needs some work if it is to move forward, and we'd be happy to work on that. But we do have some concerns. We like it in certain ways, and other ways we have some concerns with it. So with that, I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Anything for Mr. Dewey? Okay. Thank you, Mike. Anybody else here wish to testify? Dick, could you help me? It still didn't. I thought it might come clear to me during the testimony, and it didn't quite. Where all these amendments came from?
I believe Senator Atkinson.
Okay. Except for the A8s, which Jim
sort
advanced.
Of was through me.
Yeah.
Have those drafts.
Okay. There's really nobody. We heard some testimony about the A4s reverting to the original language of the bill. I don't think we got any testimony to speak of on the A5s. The A6s appear to state the policy with regard to the Internet right out of the quill.
I don't know them.
You don't know? Okay.
I've not seen them before. Yeah, I've not.
Okay. Very interesting.
Sure, a lot of names.
Okay. Well, that's a head scratcher. What?
I would like to see some legislation where we can hook the word myriad.
What?
All right. With that, we will muddle our way to the weekend and close the public hearing on Senate Bill 660 and
right now.